What were all the perspectives that you need to consider to not be disrespectful to other cultures? So it draws on the concept of intersectional feminism by inviting you to consider yourself from three perspectives that we are all impacted by: power, position, and privilege.
Hello, welcome everyone to Trouble Bubble, our podcast series where we talk about power, critical design as a practice. My name is Luna Fischer, and I'm very excited to welcome Cherianne Davis tonight. Cherianne, as a brief introduction, is a decolonial Pan-African hybrid ethnographic storytelling creator from Trinidad and Tobago. The main themes in her design and writing practice are plurality, creolization, and Sankofa. We will talk about these subjects a little bit later. She finished her master's in the visual communication design at Zurich University of the Arts this year and now works there also as a research assistant. Hello, Cherry. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm cold. It's winter, my least favorite time of the year.
So to get you warmed up a little bit, yes, we will start with the first question.
Sure.
Which is like a little bit of a surprise question, because I wanted to know, because you mentioned beforehand that music is a very important part of your life and also your work. And I wondered if you have listened to any specific song or playlist to prepare for tonight.
Oh yes, I had two songs on repeat. One, Firm and Strong by Popcorn, and Never Give Up by Chronix. So they like motivate me to not cry during this process or not get too nervous, but two Jamaican artists that I get inspiration from often, especially those songs. While doing my master's, they won't repeat for 3 months. So, yeah.
Right. I hope this is not as tedious as your master's process.
No.
And we will not cry today.
No,
or
no
only
cry.
Happy tears.
Only laughing.
Yes. So my first question would be, how would you describe your practice to a person like me that is not from the design field?
So there are two words that I'll generally use to describe my practice, which is that I am a Mako and a Bacchanalist. But being in Europe, no one understands what that means. So I love when they say, what does that mean? And I have the opportunity to say that I am a curious troublemaker who uses a variety of ways of creating and making to tell stories.
That sounds very impressive.
But the short answer is I'm a design researcher and a visual storyteller.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I noticed that you are not describing yourself first and foremost as a designer, and I wonder why that is, and if you can elaborate on that.
Being in Switzerland, being a designer has a lot of responsibility. There is such a long heritage of design thinking and design practice that sometimes I feel like an imposter. So I more or less think about ways in which I make and create, which was what design originally was, and it is what everyone outside of Switzerland kind of does. So if you don't feel comfortable in saying that you're a designer, I just say that I'm a creator and a maker.
Great. And that brings us to the next question, maybe a little bit, because we wonder also in this series, what does design has to achieve nowadays? Does it have to be in itself political or even power critical?
I don't think design needs to achieve anything. It's been trying to achieve for too long and it's failed. I think we put too much hope in design as a discipline to save the world, but I think the responsibility falls on the designers, the makers and the creators to make critical shift in our societies, but not as professionals who dictate or as those who create the need for the latest devices, or rather as them just being simple human beings. And as a human being in this world that is collapsing all around us, we would see the need to act on issues that affects us all, like climate change, human rights, and just the fight for freedom everywhere. And a design practice in today's world can never be neutral or non-political. There's, in some ways, most people would say that those days are gone. I would say that those days never existed, specifically for people who were at the margins of the Eurocentric world. To be totally honest, I didn't know what a political or power critical practice was before moving above the equator. Only in being here was my work described in that way, and I had to Google it to understand why I was being placed in this box. But now I could share some more thoughts on that.
So Why do you think, or what do you think people describe as power critical or critical in your practice, in your work?
I have absolutely no idea. Just sticking with the sense of honesty and transparency, the way that design comes from my experience as a Black woman from a tiny island of 1.5 million people growing up in a community that has been marginalized based on our access to wealth. So growing up in a poor community has always had an effect that people see me. So the news shapes your perspective of the world and how the world views those communities. I recently saw an interview by Audre Lorde on TikTok where she shares that when you live in a mode of survival, you learn that you have to value and critique the particulars of societies all the time. And that experience that she shared ties deeply with the work that I do. And it also rings true to me asking questions, even as a child. I will always ask why. Why is one way of creating and making considered design, but another is considered craft? Not in the sense of being disrespectful to the craft movements within Europe, but in the frame of craft being a diminutive descriptor of design. So who gets to decide what is design and why do we conform to it? I lived in a country that was oozing with design everywhere, but that design aesthetic wasn't considered in my design education because, and I'm quoting, a very haunting revelation from one of my design lecturers, which says, "Design is a European tradition and we don't have a defined aesthetics in Trinidad and Tobago that is comparable to the Bauhaus or the Swiss international style. This ideology isn't only confined to the design schools in the Caribbean islands, but based on conversations from designers in India, Pakistan, Philippines, and Egypt, in the Futurist Fellowship Program, design schools still teach from a Eurocentric perspective what is considered design, which is basically a limited imagination of what design has been to our communities based on our traditions and indigenous ways and even ancestral ways of making and creating."
So as we are talking about education or how you learn like about the history of design, maybe we can switch to that. And I wanted to ask you, while you were studying as an international student at Zurich University of the Arts and you finished your master there this year already, how was your experience in a predominantly white institution like Zeitharika?
Well, it was isolating because my studies started in COVID and doing most of my master's online was hard. But it also was isolating because of the topics that I wanted to engage with that challenged the established canon of design in a place that loves the established canon of design. Plus, I never had an educational experience where I was considered a minority. So that was a distinctly new experience for me. And sometimes it was very difficult to navigate. I found myself sometimes, a lot of times, searching for community outside of school who were asking similar questions to me, which led me to Futurist 2020 class Troublemakers.
And also now that you work as a research assistant, as a part of the educational system in Switzerland, and especially at Zurich University of the Arts, can you tell us a little bit more if the school is already working on a different understanding of design history, maybe?
I'd like to think that the school is looking at design history from a different point of view now, because I don't think design history can afford to be taught from a single lens anymore without having repercussions to students. So in this world that the students will now become design practitioners, they need to be prepared to have culturally relevant discussions about their field. They need to understand its past and its colonial entanglements, but they also need to be able to know that design cannot save the world. And I think this understanding of history, of the history of design from a decolonial and pluriversal lens, can provide that context to students.
And to maybe, I know that you have developed like the 3P paradigm, which is talking about privilege, power, and position. And like you just talked about it, you have to be sure where your position is in while creating things. Mm-hmm. And this is also maybe related to the concept of intersectionality. Yeah. And maybe you can tell us a little bit more about this paradigm and mm-hmm. how it can maybe, how to you came to develop it first.
So it all started in last year around this time. I started to think about what were all the perspectives that you need to consider to not be disrespectful to other cultures. So it draws on the concept of intersectional feminism by inviting you to consider yourself from three perspectives that we are all impacted by: power, position, and privilege. So I ask, what is my relationship with and to power? Does my position grant me access? And do I have privilege? This paradigm is not a concept that I solely take ownership of. It happened by many things that were inspiring me in 2021. Mostly summer conversations with Ramon Tejada, Andrew Sloat, Leonardo, and reading different books such as Emergent Strategies, Illusion of Care, and Vistas of Modernity. But one of the main catalysts that brought all of the thoughts together was an exhibition that I worked at, where the artist was speaking on behalf of a community that they didn't belong to. And the particular way in which this artist was speaking about the community that they tried to represent was a bit infantile, and there was a gaze of exoticism, and I was like, livid. So they identified a problem in the community and tried to solve it, which some designers would say is the goal of design. But the problem is, did the community ask you to solve this problem? Is this problem for the community? And this approach didn't really feel respectful or considerate of the community's agency. So I wondered about, what is the desire that designers have to go into the world and spread the good news of design? Like, we are missionaries. Are designers evangelists of taste, good design, and modernity? Why?
So also your practice is a lot about how you can decolonize design. And mm-hmm. maybe that's also what the paradigm is helpful for. And can you maybe tell us how you would use this method or mm-hmm. paradigm?
So the paradigm was developed to initially take a look at yourself with the understanding of your power, your access to privilege, and your position while engaging with cultures that are not your own. However, in doing my MA thesis, I also had to consider, how do I engage with my own culture in a non-exploitative way? And in thinking through a decolonial lens, one of the books that I was reading, which is Vistas of Modernity, Rolando Vasquez says that a decolonial intervention in academic and cultural institutions starts with an understanding of their monocultural formations and their implications in an intersectional form of exclusion. It calls for intersectional transformation. So, which I agree with, but rather than pontificating on the entire field of design, which is vast and has its own issues within each specialization, like architecture or visual communication, I need to see things from a very small perspective. So I started to think as the designer, understanding their position, and if I could make changes to my practice and enact decoloniality, and you could do that too, maybe a community of us will start to change the industry and the field overall.
Do you experience this kind of community while studying here? Was it easy to form it? Or have you already formed a community of people that have worked with these kind of techniques? I just wonder.
No. But there are more and more young designers and researchers that are asking these hard questions. And I think it will be remiss of me to not identify them, because within Futurist, we were all having these discussions around how to decolonize our thinking before we even try to design, like which perspectives are we using, which perspectives are we amplifying, whose voice are we amplifying while we create a design. And this is within a practice that may not necessarily be advertising centric, but more in a practice that you could use your design skills to send a message, to speak for your community.
And then also speaking about racist design, and I also saw it like coming up in your work, and mm-hmm. of course, but just asking very broadly for everyone, like, how does racist design look like or feel like or sound like? I don't know. Maybe you have an answer to that. It's a big question.
I think at this point in 2022, we might all be able to understand the mechanics of racist design by now. Like, I think we are aware enough to understand that design that is derogatory in its representations or design which reinforces negative stereotypes of cultures and people is racist. Like, I shouldn't have to explain that. We all understand the mechanisms of racism, but I rather focus on what does respectful design look like. Even as a designer who isn't from a culture, can you respectfully engage with that culture to represent them positively? Can you counteract the negative tropes with authentic representations of people and culture? By working within the communities and understanding how they want to be represented and doing so authentically, you break down a lot of the barriers and open the door so that these people could have their voice heard and you could amplify it.
Great. And I wanted to ask now about your own work, as we see some here in the room, not for everyone right now, but some of your themes of your work are plurality, creolization, and Sankofa. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to explain shortly, briefly to the audience that may not know about this concept. Creolization is the process through which Creole languages and cultures emerge, but also it is referring to a broader general process in which elements of different cultures are blended together and together create a new culture. And Sankofa is an African concept, meaning we should retrieve things of value from our knowledge of the past.
So as an Afro-Trinbegonian woman, I can't exist singularly. I grew up and was shaped in a world of multiplicity. The Caribbean is as a site that exists in the Americas with a shared heritage and cultures amongst the islands. However, through the genocidal contact with Europe, my African ancestors were kidnapped and trafficked across the Atlantic to build wealth in some far-off land. So I'm always thinking about these realities in my work, and they are expressed through the process of creolization. So I look specifically at Presence American, which is the site of mixing and extraction, Presence European, the dominant and colonial voice and gaze, and Presence African, the undercurrent of culture and heritage, which not only encompasses the histories of Africans, but in my country, Trinidad and Tobago, it also inhibits the histories of East Indians and all other groups that came into and that became an integral part of the fabric of our society. Sankofa for me is a concept that represents go back and fetch it, but it speaks to the fact that we must look back to the past so that we may understand how we became where we are and to move forward for a better future. And there's a symbol that represents Sankofa, and it has always been physically around me as a child growing up. So it was used on gates and houses, and in my practice I deal with history and understanding what aspects of ancestral memory can be enacted and thinking about design decolonially.
And do you think that these themes have changed in a way since you're here in Switzerland now?
Slightly. I have to be more intentional in my voice, and I have to be very focused on the messages that I want to send. So I can have all the meaning and all the intention in my work, but I'm in Switzerland. It may not be understood. It might go straight over somebody's head, or they just don't want to engage with that aspect of history or that aspect of design. So I have to understand the audience that I'm also speaking to.
And also interesting, because we talked about your graduation project. And I ask you, what is, for those of you who can't see it, it's a textual design. And I was asking, but somebody cannot understand the meaning fully, maybe. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me, oh, then people just have to ask and interact, which I think is such a important part of this work, for example. I don't know if that's always part of your work, but...
Yeah, I want to spark conversations. I want to provoke people to think about things in a different way. And I also like to get people angry, because when you're angry, like, you start to be passionate about something and you start to think about it in a different way and your arguments become very direct. So if I get you thinking a little bit more about why is this poster, which it really is, I described it as a poster and a book. And in Switzerland, everyone knows a poster to be something that is easily understandable, but this is not. And that was done with intention. Like, I want you to ask me, what is it? Why is it something that I cannot understand? And that way, it invites me to tell you more about my process, but also share with you aspects about decolonizing design.
Thank you so much. And now we're coming to an end of the interview, but I want to ask you, as my last question, mm-hmm. of course, what is next for you and where can we, like, see or hear or, yeah, get to know about your work?
Would you like my 10-year, 5-year, or 3-year plan?
10-year, please.
So, just kidding. After COVID, nobody could plan that far ahead. I like collaborating with designers, and I hope that there are more opportunities to do that in writing workshops and in creating work. I have a few ideas I like to bring to life in different formats, like exhibitions or podcasts or book, maybe even a book. But who knows? I'm open to whatever possibilities come my way, and in hopes of making good trouble.
Wow, what a great ending. Thank you so much for being here tonight, Cherry.
Thank you for the invite.
It was an absolute pleasure. And thank you for everyone listening, our live audience, and also everyone at home. You can check all the previous episodes with Maya El-Bakri, Yuviki Dio, Afonso de Matus in the show notes. And also, we are coming to an end of the series in general, and we want to thank at this time Mareike Heinz for the post-production of the podcast, Jan Borewitsch for the video editing, and Val Kobi for the technical support. And if you're interested to join us and want to collaborate with the Designathon, you find all the information in the show notes. Thank you so much.